embodied. Weil Gott mehr mit deinen Zehen zu tun hat, als du denkst. RevLab.
I really have always been into making things, but I really did not take to knitting until my first daughter was born. And when she was, I really had this like urgent need to make her a sweater. It just came on real strong and I really wanted her to have it. So I sort of, you know, driven by the sort of end result, found myself making a baby sweater. And then I was pretty much hooked from that point for knitting.
This is Rachel Bratcher. From knitting a baby sweater for her first child, she came to dye her own yarn and slowly build a business around it. Ritual Dyes, it's called. And as Rachel recalls, it came about rather intuitively. Today, she's here on Holy Embodied to talk about her approach to knitting and what she keeps discovering in the process, which can take many, many, many hours.
It was something that sort of happened in that, you know, in a similar way. I was kind of driven by results and wanting to have something that I wasn't finding exactly. But through dyeing, I ended up really enjoying the actual process. So that's kind of how I came to making, and, you know, it's changed over the years, but I've always been interested in doing things and making stuff and being creative.
Wow. And then it grew into this business that you're running now. And I suppose you're living from that, right?
Yes. Yeah. It grew into this business. But really, you know, kind of, I would say sort of slowly, I started just dying in my kitchen, you know, for myself, for projects for myself, for projects for my friends. Initially, just like I was looking for a gray in for this particular project I wanted. And every gray that I found had this like blue cast. And I was like, but I really want this like brown, neutral, you know, kind of warm gray. And then just like, how can I have that? And started just messing around and playing around. And I think that like, I have a tendency to sort of rush through things, but dyeing has kind of slowed me down in the fact that I really enjoy the work of it and the process of it and the colors you create and the layering and like all of the creative energy that goes into it is what I'm interested in, more than sort of the end result is like the benefit, you know, and everything up until that point had been sort of reverse process for me. So that's kind of what really drew me to it. And then I moved out of my kitchen, you know, just 3 years ago into this space that has evolved into a yarn shop. But it's always remained a dye studio.
And two of these years were pandemic.
Yeah. So, which kind of propelled the shop really, because my first intention with this space was just to keep it as a dye house and to ship our wholesale and retail orders that we got, you know, online. But through the pandemic, I just really realized that there was kind of a need to connect with our customers differently. And just being that so many of our customers are local here in Portland, it's, you know, and our business is so tactile and like, you know, so like his colors are so nuanced, and just having a place where you can actually come in and see it and feel it is kind of essential. So it grew into like a community sort of like neighborhood yarn shop through the pandemic, really. Because we were missing that connection so much and you know, not being able to kind of find it in other ways. And the shop, I can have, you know, just a few people. It can be, you know, in at a time, it's something that like could kind of work through that time when we were like so isolated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many people, including myself, that was the time when we started knitting, because
so
before
true.
It was like, why would I?
You have other things.
Busy.
No, I know. I've seen so many new knitters and makers, which is it's so cool. I love it. I love having people in that are like just discovering it and then just discovering kind of the community around it. Because Portland has such a massive, you know, creative community, and being able to like kind of connect with that after getting into it, you know, is kind of cool for some of those like newer makers and knitters. So yeah, I love it. I love that.
Wow.
That it's brought that actually.
And within a time, you wouldn't necessarily, you know, think that that's what's coming from it. You know what I mean?
No, like, right. Yeah. It's kind of like so this sweet great. Little thing that came out of it.
Yeah.
Which I'm, yeah, definitely grateful for that.
So you mentioned that dyeing yarn has showed you or taught you how to slow down, and you call your business Ritual Dyes. So what's the ritual in it?
Well, for me, it's kind of like, it is that process, and really like sort of taking that time to explore and like enjoy that creative process. This was kind of, you know, one of my first jobs back after being a mom and being at home with kids and, you know, having that kind of missing for a little bit, like my, you know, the work part of me or the creative part of me. So kind of making sure to really value that time and give it that sort of attention. This is a bit of a, like a ritual and sort of this work, but it is also really self-care for me because, you know, I'm kind of tapping into some things that I don't always get to, you know, that I'm not always like able to do. So it's a bit of both. It is a ritual for me.
And when you say, you mentioned that you wanted, it all started with you wanting that particular gray.
I know, it's so silly. It is true.
No, it's not. Like, how did you have that exact, where did that exact like idea or image or sense of that gray come from? Like, how do you get that?
I don't know. I don't know. But I think that's kind of how I when I am like looking or shopping for things, I mean, I'm most often like I already have it in my head exactly what I want, and I'm just trying to find it. It's not always like this, you know. I mean, I enjoy browsing and like discovering things and that, you know, I wouldn't have even thought I wanted, but a lot of times it's more like, oh, this is, it was like, I think it was like a colorwork project and it just really needed that kind of, I really wanted a neutral. I really wanted a warm gray. And for whatever reason, everything I saw was cool and like just blue cast and different from what I wanted. And it was just, the tone wasn't right. And it was just me being super fussy and just driven to get exactly what it was that I was after.
It speaks of a very precise, you know, I guess like sense of aesthetic or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Definitely. How definitely did like that pretty things.
But not just pretty, like they have to be, it sounds like it's they need to be precisely like that and then it's good.
Maybe it's my own world of like what it is, but
like did you come from art or
I have a background in fashion, in you know, retail clothing, and definitely have always had an interest and eye in how things really look as finished garments in terms of like knitting. Like when I look at knitwear or when I buy yarn, I am thinking about what it's going to like translate to on a person and how it's going to look. You know, whether that's like, you know, but the tone, the color, but like also, you know, if I'm making something for myself, like I'm always wondering how it's going to work into my wardrobe or like, you know, things like that. It's definitely part of what I'm considering when I'm, you know, when I'm thinking about that. So I think I have a bit of that sort of like lens on from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that probably, you know, comes across on in different places, but definitely always thinking about that.
It's not always easy though. Like to, when you start a project, to know how it ends up, like, at least for me, it's like, well, we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's okay too. Like because it is like, it's so much, you know, I think that like over, you know, through like trial and error, if I'm making a project for myself too, like kind of discovered what it is that really like works for me, what I actually will wear, like, cause I'm drawn to all kinds of things, you know, but then I kind of hone it down to like, okay, like, but really what am I going to be like using all the time and really like incorporating?
Yeah.
Or where is this like gap in my, you know, wardrobe that like need that would be like well filled with like, is it a cardigan or is it a, you know, whatever, but like it's a consideration for sure. And it's not, and I'm not always right, but I am thinking about it.
Can you keep everything you knit, or do you have to? I guess not. I guess you have to.
For the shop, or for
yourself.
I don't keep everything, but there are definitely a few pieces that, you know, that I'll come back to, or that, like, I'm not great at knitting things twice, but I have, and I will, if it's like, you know, like I really want to see in a different fabric, or I know that if I had just done like two things differently, I, you know, like it would just be that much better. So I will, on occasion, knit things twice.
But are you someone who like, let's say you make a mistake or it's not perfect, do you then open up the whole thing and start again?
That's so hard.
I know.
I mean, I hate doing that. Of course, it's painful on many levels. But if I know that I'm going to be like always looking at that one thing, if it's like, I kind of have to weigh like how much it's going to bother me. Like if it's really like I can live with it and it's fine and I'm not going to like point it out to everybody who compliments my sweater, then, then I'll keep it. But if I know that I'm going to like preface every, like, you know, thank you and compliment with, yes, but did you see this? Did you see this thing that I did here? Then I will just take it out and start over on that spot. Yeah. Wow. Even if it hurts. Yeah.
It does.
And it does. Yeah. Especially if you're like far along and realize it or whatever. If I realize it right away, like I'll definitely fix it because it'll bother me. Just depends on how much it'll bother you, I guess.
It's amazing how much you can, or for myself, how much I learned through this process of knitting, of, about like patience. And it's okay if you, you know, make a mistake, it's okay to start again. Like all
these
new things. And I don't know, is that something that you notice too when you knit? Or
yes,
is it so like I can do this in my sleep? It's nothing anymore.
I'm not a particularly fast knitter. Like some, you know, people are just like cranking out super quickly. That's not me. So it just automatically forces me to slow down, you know, and to make like, kind of like what we were talking about before, just sort of these decisions about exactly what it is that I want to be. Okay. One, wearing in, you know, 2 months or 3 months or whenever this is over, but also like, am I going to enjoy the process of making it? Because you're going to be making it for, you know, are you going to want to pull it out and work on it? Like those kind of, you know, things. And for me, like I've kind of found that I have a bit of a sweet spot with like, you know, some engagement and then some stockinette and then some, you know, like I will like continue to work through a project that has this sort of balance of engagement and kind of cruising through stockinette. And if it's, you know, overly kind of complicated, or I have to refer to the pattern every step of the way, like knowing myself, I just probably wouldn't, it will just sit there for too long, you know? So I'm picking projects based on, more than one thing. Yeah, for sure. Also just like, am I going to enjoy knitting it? You know?
Yeah. Cause if you don't, then.
Cause then I probably won't knit it, and I can't knit everything that I want to knit because I'm not cranking these things out at like a rapid pace. So I have to, it definitely forces me to slow down, which I really appreciate about knitting. It's not just something you can rush through. And that's kind of why it's okay that if you, you know, want to like fuss it or make a mistake or cast on five times until you're satisfied, like, why not? Because you're going to be sitting with it for so long anyway. So you might as well like be happy with it.
Yeah. And you're not losing anything, you know, it's just,
yeah. Well, I guess that's the other part, right? Exactly. You can just rip it out and keep going. And it's not like where you're, you know, like I love sewing, but I'm not a great sewist. And if I make a mistake, it's just like, I mean, sometimes there's no going back. Like you've just kind of trashed it, you know? So that is the kind of benefits about knitting. It's just that it is really forgiving, you know, and you can like block it and shape it. And like, I would say it's a pretty forgiving craft. Yeah.
It actually is. It seemed so complicated to me. It was like, no, this is way too complicated. And you have to be so precise, but no.
And also not really. And it, like, you're making something, you know, for yourself so you can really like adjust everywhere you need to, you know, like for a long time, my gauge was really off. And, you know, I would adjust my yarn, I would adjust my needle size, I would do whatever, you know, combination of things to make it work. And it's cool that like, you know, everyone comes at it with like sort of, you know, their own way of doing it, which is nice.
It's so great. And yeah, and the joy of working with, for me, it's the colors. I enjoy it because of the colors. I just want to touch that color.
Right.
Yeah, so you mentioned it's like the dyeing is a ritual in itself. Maybe I want to go further into the dyeing process. What
sure.
How does that work?
How do we dye? Or
yeah, like how did you, so you said you wanted that specific color. That's how it started. And then like from that to then actually go and do it.
Oh yeah.
how did that come upon?
I messed around a lot. You know, I taught myself by just reading a lot on the internet, reading, you know, some books and watching YouTubes and kind of getting the sort of like basics. And then once I kind of understood, you know, just the sort of materials needed and kind of the general process, it was a lot of just playing, you know, just really playing and trying things. And like, you know, some things didn't work, you know, some things I was super happy with, but I couldn't recreate, like, you know, so just kind of a lot of playing, a lot of messing around until I kind of landed on a really small palette that that I was really happy with. That I just these sort of, I think I started with 6 colors that I kept coming back to, that I was like, oh, I, you know, I would make them over and over again. And I would just, I really liked the way that they all look together. It was just like kind of noticing that I was creating a collection, you know, just out of, you know, a lot of kind of experimenting. And then I kind of just fine-tuned that. And realize like, you know, this is maybe like a thing that I could do. Like, you know, I was, why can't I do this? You know, it's, and from there, I ended up taking it to my, my local yarn shop at the time, which is Starlight Knitting Society. They're in also in Southeast Portland. And they just really loved it and they were super supportive, and kind of really just pushed me in all the right places to, you know, to move forward with it. And that's what I did.
That's so great. And that whole, like, when you tell the story like this, oh, I was just playing, experimenting, blah, blah, blah. It sounds so easy. Was there ever a point where it took a lot of courage for you to actually do play and experiment and keep going?
Well, I would say, it was hard in the beginning because at the time that I started the business, I was working at it was my first job back basically, after being a stay at home parent, was at my child's school. I was teaching handwork. They have a handwork program in their school. So I was, handwork assistant from 1st to 8th grade. So doing all the grades, which just ended up being not a lot of hours necessarily, but just kind of scattered throughout the day. So it took up, you know, most every day. So then I ended up dying at night, which was like, I'm not a night person. I like all my energy is in the morning. So that was just kind of this challenge. And then it kind of came to this point where I really just had to, you know, to sort of make a decision, like, do I want to really pursue this and just see where it goes, even if it just like ends right here in my kitchen, or do I, you know, or do I want to like kind of keep working, you know, towards maybe like a bigger goal at their school? Or, you know, I did sort of have like a kind of crossroads that I came to, but ultimately I did feel strongly that, you know, I was getting really good feedback about the work that I was doing. And I kind of felt like this, and it was really fun for me and satisfying. And it allowed a much more flexible sort of schedule too for me, with my family. So I just went all in, but I grew it so small that it did give me like a lot of freedom to play and to keep it kind of light and fun. I didn't have, you know, I didn't jump into like a workspace right away or any of that kind of stuff. So I didn't have the same kind of pressure. So I think removing that sort of pressure of like a lot of overhead allowed me to really enjoy it for a long time and really get comfortable with what I was doing mm-hmm. before I took it to that next level. So I do think that helped me to kind of keep it fun and playful and allow myself a lot of time to experiment with not a lot of pressure.
Mm. And did that just come about organically? Like when we think business, right? Or when we think, okay, this is what I love to do, so let's go for it. Then the head comes in and goes like, okay, let's make a plan. Let's make a business plan. Let's blah, 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 all that shit.
Yeah, for sure.
Which puts a lot of pressure on us and it's not beneficial.
Yes, it's true. I mean, I've always been, you know, my dad was a small business owner. You know, before I had kids, I had a retail shop and was a small business owner. So I have always had that mind to be kind of a entrepreneur in that way. So this wasn't like a sort of big leap on that front, but it was kind of it did kind of ease into it, and didn't rush things. And, you know, was working in my house for over 2 years, you know, dying first in my kitchen and then down in my basement. So it did give me kind of a good foundation, I think, before taking like a bigger step. And in a way, you know, once I kind of realized that I had something, then I was really motivated to, you know, to kind of see how far I could take it and see, you know, like, will people like it if I do this? Will people like it if I do that? But literally, I mean, being a creative person, it's like everything that I do, every single thing that I release, I'm always worried about taking that leap and like how it will be received. It's like this thing that I'm like, you know, serving up and like wondering like, oh, are people just going to completely hate this? Or, you know, like who knows? Because that's just the sort of, I think that's just kind of the way it is when you're a creative and you're putting your work out there.
Yeah. Cause it, I suppose I'm projecting it's coming from like the deepest within your heart, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. It's kind of risky to go like,
it does feel a little risky actually. It feels like that every time. Yes. Sort of, because you've put in all this time and you've spent, you know, all this energy on it and you've really attached yourself to like, oh, this is like something I'm super happy about, something I super, you know, love and like, and yeah, I think, you know, who wouldn't like this? And then you're like, oh, I hope you do. So I think it's like that every time that I release thing. It's always like with a little anxiety or just kind of like, you know, you're sort of putting yourself out there, and it that just carries some risk, like whether that's financial or emotional or both, or it's out there. Yeah.
Mm. And when people buy from you, it's not, you don't just get the yarn, you get like the little bag and then the little, what was it, like little incense or something. like you get a little ritual as well as your customer.
Yeah. I would love people to feel like that they get like something that kind of reminds them to, you know, to sort of slow down and like really enjoy the sort of practice that they're, you know, this thing that they're giving themselves, this gift that they're giving themselves of like taking time to make something, you know, mm-hmm. it's not, there's no like real shortcut, you know, it's just like this sort of slow thing that you're allowing yourself to do, which like in our, you know, world isn't always highly valued, anything that's like slow. So I think just kind of taking to just really settle in and like, you know, have like, you know, some frankincense burning or whatever, and, you know, enjoy it, have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or whatever, and just really like settle into that mindset, you know, which I think that we don't get to do all the time. And I think knitting kind of helps support that.
Yeah. Unless you turn it into something you have to do and then it's stressful and then
true. And that's, you know, that's a possibility. And I think whenever you make something that's like your hobby, your work, you know, you run that risk too of just taking this thing that you really enjoy and making it something that you depend on can be, you know, it can ruin it in a lot of ways. But for me, it hasn't for me for knitting, because I don't do any knitting that I don't really want to do.
Great.
I'm not, you know, if we have samples that need to be made for the shop or anything, I haven't, you know, anything that has like sort of a deadline, not being a very fast knitter, you know, I usually will hire like a sample knitter or someone to make, you know, that is like, that is really fast and that's what they're, you know, interested in doing for work, then that works out better for me.
Yeah.
And it allows me to kind of, you know, still really enjoy the practice and not have too much pressure around the craft.
Yeah. Would you say it is your, this is your spiritual practice?
To me, it can, yeah, I think I have found that it does kind of, you know, give me that. And my family isn't religious. We don't do, you know, like we're really kind of, we embrace the seasons and really have a lot of traditions and rituals around sort of every season and really kind of lean into like that as our spiritual practice. So knitting, you know, falls in there too. That's kind of what feels like authentic for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you have other ways or other practices which help you to slow down, as you mentioned knitting does, or dying?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's summer right now here. And so it's, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, there is like this sort of urgency around summer because it's really warm and it's really nice out and it isn't always throughout the year. So there is a bit of this sort of go, go, go energy.
Yeah.
And I love it because, you know, it's like a big out breath, whereas like winter feels like a really, like a real in breath, because we're all cozy. It's dark at 5, you know, we're like, but summer it's light till, you know, it can be light till 10 o'clock. So where we are here, there's definitely a lot of energy to go, go, go in the summertime. So finding those places like to actually also relax and take it slower and, you know that like, as much as we want to enjoy it, like part of enjoying it is like being slow and actually enjoying it. So, you know, we'll have like lazy kind of river days where we just spend the whole day kind of hanging out. And, in the winter, I enjoy baking. I really don't do any of it in the summer, but that's something that I enjoy doing that is, you know, certainly like slow and kind of sets a sort of mood in the same way of just being kind of cozy and, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm not very like motivated to like cook, but baking I really enjoy.
Nice. And it's another thing you do with your hands.
True.
Same as with the dyeing and the knitting. And it's like you get that immediate feedback from your body of, okay, this is too much. My hands hurt now. Or
right.
With the baking, right. You burn yourself.
Yes, right. Or you're just kneading the bread for way too long and
or whatever. Yeah, exactly. And then you have that. It's amazing how much the body tells you, gives you these signals of, okay, we're out of balance, honey.
Yes. Right.
Sometimes you catch it, sometimes you don't.
Right. Sometimes you don't. But definitely.
So yeah, I'd love to hear about how this actual process of dyeing works. So you get sheep's wool in what state?
Like in my, how does okay, it come so, in? So some, you know, different processes for different people, but for me, I have it already in a skein form. So, you know, I'll dye, I do have a superwash wool base, but I also have non-superwash wool bases that are custom milled from different US mills. And those require like kind of two different things. You know, superwash wool is something where you can throw a lot at it. It takes speckles really beautifully. You can be a little harder on it and it will still fluff up and be a perfect skein afterwards. Mm. And non-superwash is more like, you know, more delicate. You have to go a little slower. It doesn't take dye the same way. It's fun to have both to kind of work with, get really different results from, you know, superwash and non-superwash. And it's just a really different process for me too. I usually, you know, most of our dyes are acid dyes, and you know, we dye here in the basement of our shop in Southeast Portland. We have a venting system from the basement. And, you know, we'll turn that on, wear, put on our masks and gloves and set to it. It's nice to have a really messy space to dye because ultimately everything gets very wet and splattered, and it gives you some freedom. When I was in my kitchen, it was a little bit different. So I like being able to have like a you know, a big creative space to just a beautiful mess. That's what's happening beautiful downstairs. And then since we've kind of transitioned into having a retail shop, our upstairs is, you know, it's just where all of the finished yarn is, and where, you know, I've brought in some other lines as well. So I have, you know, some other beautiful brands in the shop and makers tools, and I've brought in some fabric. You know, this is kind of like more of sort of the tidier space where everything is displayed and you can play with like colors for projects and stuff. And then it's nice to be able to have, you know, sort of two separate zones for the work that I'm doing.
And do you like the sheep or whatever that wool comes,
yes,
or the fabric comes from? Is that something you're aware of as you're dyeing or as you're knitting, or is it just like,
yes,
oh, whatever?
You know, the non-superwash wool is very connected to the sheep. Like, I know that, you know, for our Elder and Maven basis, all of that wool is climate beneficial wool that comes from sheep in Northern California. And so when we receive it, you know, there's always like vegetable matter and little bits of like hay and stuff in it. And I mean, I love that because you just can really kind of connect to where it's come from. And I think that because of different sheep producing different sort of fiber and the way that it feels, having kind of worked on creating these custom mill bases has really connected me a little bit deeper to that part of it. Like our Sprite base is Corriedale and Merino, and it's custom milled out in Baton Kill Fibers, which is in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And all the sheep come from that area, and it is a very different feel, you know, from Elder or Maven or our new Merino base, which is 100% Cormo. And that is from mountain meadows. And so all the sheep are in Wyoming, and it's just each one has its own thing. And you can tell by the way that it feels, by the way that it behaves when you're, you know, blocking it and knitting it, what is like best for specific projects. You know, it kind of determines all those things. And when I'm dyeing that yarn, you definitely have, you know, a little bit more of that connection. And when I'm working with it too, for sure, like in a knitting project. And you're still picking out little bits of like fluff or like, you know, little pieces of hay or whatever, which is so cool.
Oh, cool. I mean, you can really fall into that deep down into that rabbit hole of like the whole yarns and then the sheep and the different wools.
Oh my gosh, yes.
It's knitting is discovering a whole new world, and it's just blowing my mind.
It's true. And it's like, and there's so much to learn. Like, no matter how deep you go into it, there's just always another technique, always another, you know, thing that you never heard of, which is so cool that it goes so deep. So you really have like, you could just continue to keep learning, which I think is really inspiring. You're not just going to like reach the end, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Love it. It's another metaphor of like, yeah, we're doing here is playing.
Yeah.
And
learning, and like there's no real goal, you know. And every pattern that I like knit, I pretty much always am learning like some different technique, whether that's just like the way that the designer does it a little bit differently and it like just sort of clicks differently for me, or, you know, or just something that I actually have to like look up and like really study to understand. But there's always something, you know, new to get out of it. And the idea that you could, you know, pick up this craft that you could really learn to knit in a day and like be making something, but then that could evolve into something like totally different, you know, in 2 years that you're making something that is like a perfectly fitting sweater. Like, that is so cool, you know, that there's just so much room to grow and so much to learn.
Great. Great. Thank you. I think that's we're good.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for having me.
That was Rachel Bratcher from Portland, Oregon, west coast of the United States, talking about knitting, yarn, dyeing, and, well, life. Thank you so much for listening. Wir hören uns wieder in zwei Wochen, dann wieder auf Deutsch. RevLab.